Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Mem Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of daf Mem Dalid. The opening quote is essentially a pasuk that was cited in the Mishnah with regard to the general topic of Torah-based exemptions from battle service. And on the side of our Gemara, we have noted Divrei HaShoitrim, the words of the Shotrim before they enter into battle, Asher Eras Isha, and here we're going to refer to the case of the individual of the, that had married or betrothed a wife that had not yet consummated his marriage with her. The pasuk that opens the Gemara is from Devarim, Perek, Chav, Pasuk, Zayin, and it reads as follows in the Chumash. It reads, Umiho ish asher eras isha velo likocha, a man who betrothed a wife, gave her money in exchange for agreeing to marry him, but he hasn't consummated the marriage. Yelech v'yoshev lebeso, he shall return home. Pen yomus ba milchoma v'ishacher yikochena, lest he die in battle and some other man then take her. The Gemara. Mi ho'ish asher es isha v'lo l'kocha tonu rabbonon asher eras. The pasuk uses that expression. Echon hama'ares es habsula v'echon hama'ares es ho'almona, whether it be the betrothal of a virgin, a girl who had never been married, or the man has betrothed a widow. V'yechad shomeres yavam, likewise a case of a man whose brother died leaving no children, and he is in the wings to marry his sister-in-law, which is called a yibum marriage. V'afilu chamisho achen u'meisechad mehem b'mechama, even in a situation where there were five brothers, one of the brothers died in battle, leaving no children but a widow. Kulan Chosrin, all four surviving brothers are now exempt from continuing into battle. The pasuk, instead of saying lo lokach, it says velo likocha. Lo lokach means he didn't take her, but velo likocha, it means also he didn't take her. Prat, there is a limitation by adding the hey to this word. You have a limitation. Prat li almona l'kohen gadol, grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyo. Several examples of a marriage that is unlawful, and as a result, the soldier is not entitled to return home. For example, a kohen gadol that married an almona, or a kohen hedyo, a common kohen who offered money in exchange for the agreement of marriage of a grusha, of a divorcee, or a chalutza, woman who was denied yibum and did the shoot removal ceremony. Mamzerasu nasino l'Israel, a Jew who married one of these illegitimate type people. Mamzeres is an illegitimate birth. Nasino is a descendant from the givonim, a people prohibited to marry into the Jewish people. And Bas Yisrael Mamzer Ulanosin, or let's say the soldier was a Mamzer or a Nosin, and his marriage was to a regular Jewish girl, rank and file Jewish descendant, that would be a prohibited marriage. And on those, and as a result of that prohibition, the soldier does not receive an exemption from battle service. This source tells us that because of the special gzeiras hakosev of a lo likacha, So these sinful marriages don't constitute grounds for an exemption. Lema deloka Rabbi Yosef Glili. Should we say that this approach is not like that of Rabbi Yosef Glili? The Rabbi Yosef Glili, ho omar hayore v'rach halevov, there is an exemption for someone who is faint-hearted and fear-struck. Zeha misyori ma'avir shevel, that's a reference to someone who's fearful of sins that he has committed. So, if a Kohen married a Grusha, would that not be a sinful act? On those grounds, would he not be able to return home? According to Rabbi Yosef Glili, we would say yes. And this source says that he does not have an exemption. So it would seem that the source is not in conjunction with Rabbi Yosef Glili. The Gemara says not so. Afilu temo Rabbi Yosef Glili. We can actually align this source with the opinion of Rabbi Yosef Glili. Kidarabo. In order to align them, we have to accept Rabbo's principle. Diyama Rabbo, li oilom eino chayav ad shigiv erul. When we speak about a Kohen hedyo, let's say these Kohen prohibited marriages, the pasuk, or I should say the halacha, says that he is not considered having violated the Torah regulations until he actually conducts an act of intimacy with the forbidden woman. In other words, contrary to what we thought up till now, that merely betrothing her, merely offering her money in agreement for the marriage was the sinful act, we're revealing here, no, that maybe it's not a nice thing to do, it's not a right thing to do, but we wouldn't call it an act for which he would be held liable. He's not chayav, he's not considered as having violated the Torah's precept until actual intimacy. Ma tam lo lokach. Why does this Torah say not that a Kohen shall not take a grusha? Mishum lo yichalel. Because of the ramifications that has. It's not the mere act of betrothal that is the problem. It's the fact that there will be a desecration. Yichalel has to do with the profaning or the desecration of his seed. Mishum hochi eino loke ad shiv ol. Therefore, there is no lashing for this violation of the negative commandment or Kohen not to take a grusha, for example. This is not considered subject to lashing until actual intimacy. Therefore, prior to that, even if a Kohen, let's say, gave money to the grusha for her agreeing to marry him, that would not fall under the category of yore and rachalevov. So he wouldn't have an exemption on the grounds of yore v'rachalevov, which is an exemption that Rabbi Yosef Glili acknowledges, but it's not so over here. What about the fact that he has offered money and is anticipating a wife, which is, generally speaking, grounds for exemption? Ah, with regard to that, we have the Gzeres HaKosuv v'lo l'kocho, where there are certain kinds of marriages or betrothals which do not result in an exemption. And these are examples of it. Rashi does a thorough review of these examples that we just said of, we'll say, forbidden marriages that don't have a battle exemption. Let's look together at the Rashi, Divar Masul Kidarabo. The upper part of the narrow lines in the column that ordinarily would have Tosfos in it. We mentioned earlier in a previous shiur that in this perek you see that there are no Tosfos, and Rashi occupies both columns. So we're reading from the Rashi, Dibor Masel Kidarabo. Diomar Ein Avero Bekidushin Achiv Ol. There is no sin in the actual act of offering money to the forbidden woman. The sin is transgressed only upon the act of intimacy. Shiyovi zaroi oy eso ishali de chilul. The result of this forbidden intimacy would create his descendants as being chalolim, profaned, or the woman is also, she is ruined. Umamzeres unesina, these are forbidden women anyway, ain avera bikidushin, there isn't any avera in the offering her money for her marriage. Delok siv bay lo yikach, the Torah doesn't use the expression lo yikach to begin with. Ella, how does the Torah present the prohibition? Lo yavo, velo sischatein, different words that indicate to us that the prohibition is at the point of intimacy, not prior to that. Avol almona, when it comes to the issue of the almona to a kohen gadol, the widow to a kohen gadol, ksiv ba lo yikach. The term lo yikach appears. V'kicha heinu kiddushin. Kicha is a reference to that initial stage of establishing a marital bond, i.e., offering her money or money equivalent. V'itzdrich derabo, and with regard to the almona, almona l'kohen gadol, there I will need Rabbah's teaching, the lotema, that you shouldn't think mikidushin avad le isur, that from the point that money was given, the sin has already taken place, which would have given rise to Rabbi Yossi Haglili's basis for exemption. So Rabbah tells us not so. The prohibition in the case of a almona to a kohen gadol and a grusha v'chalutza to kohen hedyot, even though you see the expression of lo yikach, don't think that the prohibition is at the point money is given, but it's rather at the point of intimacy. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi Haglili would not have offered an exemption at this point where only money was given to the forbidden woman. Let's turn back to our Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. These opening words of the Brisa really quotes from Psukim, right, that we cited earlier, Psukim in Dvorim Perek Chof. And here we have a topic on the side. We have a topic heading to Nosei, and it reads as follows: Seder HaChayim, the order, the proper order for one to lead his life. Hochein Bachutz Malachtecha, we will see a posuk from Mishlei that is darshaned, and it's coming on the heels of the posuk from the Torah. And as we said, the lesson that this section of Gemara will convey has to do with order, procedure. How do you, what takes priority over what? Tonu Rabbanan, Asher Bona, Asher Nota, Asher Eras. Asher Bona is a reference to posuk Hey in Perikhof, which deals with the issue of the battle exemptions, a man who built a house and had not lived in it yet, Asher Nota, he planted a vineyard and hadn't enjoyed its fruits yet, that was in Pasuk Vav, and Pasuk Zayin, Asher Eras, notice the order then, you have house, field, or vineyard, and then marriage, Limdo Toro Derech Eretz, the Torah is in the order. Not only when you learn Torah, we're not only word and letter sensitive, even order and placement of things has significance. So here you have a lesson in life. Derech Eretz, she ivne odom bayis vita korem. First, a person should build a house and plant a vineyard. Planting a vineyard represents a form of income, a source of income. V'achakach yiso ishanen, marry. So that a person should have a domicile and a source of income at his behest before he marries. The Af Shlomo Omar Bechochmasu, and likewise Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, who's associated with the authorship of the Book of Mishlei, the Book of Proverbs, he has written in his wisdom, Hachin b'chutz melachtecha ve'artada b'sodeloch achar uvonisa b'secha. You can, by scanning ahead, you'll see in this Tanaic source there are numerous approaches to this pasuk. The first one is a direct tie-in to the subject that we've been discussing till now. Number one, Hachin b'chutz melachtecha, that expression is a reference to zeh bayis, that's establish a house, a physical house. The atadah b'sodeh loch zeh kerem. The word sodeh indicates a field, a vineyard, crops, income. Acharu vonisa beisecha. Now here, the trick is not to translate, but it's to understand something on a deeper level. The pasuk says, and then bonisa beisecha, translated mean, and then build your house. It says zu isha. Now, I would like to note that in Gittin, Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, there's a statement made, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Pinchas makes the statement that Me'olam lo karisi ishti ishti elo ishti beisi. I never referred to my wife as using the term ishti, my wife, but rather I refer to her as my house. It's well known that in the traditional Jewish home, down through the ages, the woman, the wife, is in effect the mainstay. We call her the Akeres Habayis, Loshen the Iker, the mainstay of the house. She takes care of the house's workings, the raising of the children. We've seen already merits that women can accrue through motivating. Instilling desire for their husbands to learn Torah. So here in this pasuk in Mishlei, you see the same concept that the order from Sefer Dvarim teaches. Dovar Acher, another approach to this pasuk, is Ochein v'chutz melachtecha ze mikra. This, from here till the end of the source, the issue is order of study. First, one studies Mikra, scriptures. V'atadah b'sodeloch zeh Mishnah. That's the Mishnayis, which is, we'll say, the basis of the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a skeletal presentation of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Acharu v'niso b'secho zeh Gemara. Then, when you've finished Mishnayis, then you start the study of Gemara. And Rashi says, Gemara lo seis svara lahavin b'tamei ha-mishnah v'alocha k'divrei mi. The role of the Gemara is to offer explanations for the Mishnah. We indicated the Mishnah was a skeletal version of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So you need to embellish upon that which is said in Mishnayis, offering reasons for laws taught therein. And the Gemara also reaches halachic conclusions, which is something that's unique to the Gemara, and as we've learned in the past, one is not to issue rulings, halachic rulings, based on the Mishnayis. Dovar Acher, Hachein b'chutz melachtecha zeh mikra u'mishna, ve'atadah b'sodeh loch zeh Gemara, achar uvonisa beisecha, once you've learned the Torah Shebaal Peh, once you've learned the Mishnayis and the Gemara, then Elu Maisim Tovim. Then one is ready to fulfill acts of kindness, acts of loving kindness, Maisim Tovim. And you'll ask, well, how can that be? What, Maisim Tovim have to wait that long till you finish all of the Shas? So the answer that the answer that would seem appropriate is that Maisim Tovim requires knowledge. Acts of loving kindness are not emotional acts. If one does things emotionally, you can end up doing more harm than good. On other occasions, we've cited examples to this effect. For example, visiting the sick, that everyone would agree is considered a Maisim Tov. If one visits the sick because he thinks it's a good thing to do, he doesn't really give too much thought before going to visit the sick. It just goes to visit the sick. Did it ever occur that there's certain kinds of ailments that silence is actually preferable. Talking and gabbing does not serve the infirmed in good stead. Likewise, there are certain ailments that could actually be a source of embarrassment, and the ailing individual would prefer not being visited. By studying the halachas, the gemaras, one sees the depth of these points and how and when to fulfill and when not to fulfill. Likewise, with regard to giving charity, giving tzedakah, there's a way to do it. There's a preferred way to do it. You want to do it in such a way that you will limit the amount of embarrassment. Without the study of the topic, without Torah study, a person says, "Oh, he needs money. I'll just hop on over and give him some cash and say, here, I know times are not so good for you. Maybe this will help you out." Maybe the person prefers anonymity, prefers not being recognized and associated with business failings. So, true, you try to help him out, but you end up hurting him even more by not having done so, by not having offered the supposed Maase Tov in the first place. There's a fourth drasha, Rebbe Elazar beno Shrav Yossi Aglili Omer, Hachin b'chutz malachtecho zeh mikra u'mishna u'gemara, v'yatada b'sadeloch elu maisim tovim, achar u'voniso beisecho, drosh v'kabel schar. The Marsha, on this last expression, drosh v'kabel schar, he says, zuhi chochma iunis. Iunis, iun, is a term associated with depth and analysis and a level of understanding that's beyond that which we would refer to as the Gemara per se. The Gemara itself is, as we saw before, an explanation of the Mishnayos. The study of Talmud Bavli is what we associated with Gemara. There's, we'll say, deeper approaches to Torah study. What exactly is referred to by these deeper levels of Torah study, we're going to leave that as an open issue, but let us make it very clear that for true success in Torah learning, one must follow the order as prescribed by the ones who wrote the book, the Chazal. And For a further discussion on this topic, we highly recommend looking into the famous Sefer Musar called Orchos Tzadikim. You look at chapter 27, especially the second half of that particular chapter, and he elaborates quite a bit on this topic of the significance of following the order as you find in the Chazal. There are quite a few other Gemaras on this topic. We point out prominently the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zorah Daf Yud Tes Omid Aleph, and as well as the Gemara in Brochus Daf Samach Gimel and Shabbos Daf Samach Gimel as well, which has points that are very much related to this, the significance of order, and perceive that one studies a little fraction of, a little section of Gemara, and then delves into deep analysis of that little section without having the entire background of Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. Let's now continue in the Gemara itself. The Elu She'enon Choizrin Haboine Beishar, and it went on to say, Rabbi Omer Af Haboine Bayas Al Mechoinoi Eino Chozer. Rabbi Yudah said that if one rebuilds a house that fell down, and he rebuilds it exactly as it was originally, that's not grounds for returning. It's not a bias chodosh, it's not a new house. And here the Gemara adds that Tana im hoisif bo dimus echad chozer. if in his reconstruction of the old house he adds an additional row, a row of bricks, an additional aspect to the structure that wasn't there initially, then he is entitled to the battle exemption. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Af Habina Bayis Levenim B'Sharon Lo Hoyachozer. One who builds a brick house in the Sharon area of Israel does not, on the basis of his building a house there, he does not have a battle exemption. Tana, Mipnei Shemechatshin Oisei Pamayim B'Shavua. The house built of bricks in that area doesn't last very long. Twice in 7 years it would need to be rebuilt. And therefore it's a type of house that has very little significance and thereby not warranting a battle exemption. The Mishnah tells us about others that don't leave their houses in the time of war, as opposed to what we've discussed till now, those that actually go to the battleground and they await the announcement made by the Moshuach Milchama and the Shoitrim telling us who goes back home after having reached the battle lines. In this case, in this section of the Mishnah, there are those that don't even leave their houses in the first place. Tonu Rabbonam, Isha Chadosha. I want to note, though, before we continue on the side, the Pasuk from Dvarim, Perichov Dalid, Pasuk Hey. Let's read the Pasuk together. Ki Yikach Ish Isha Chadosha, when a man marries a new woman, a new wife, Lo Yetze Batzava, Velo Yavor Olov, Lechol Dovar, he doesn't go into battle, and nothing else is passed upon him, is cast upon him. L'chol nokiyeh lebeiso shona achas, he remains at home for 1 year. V'simach es ishto asher lokach, and he creates joy and happiness for the wife that he has just taken. The Gemara, isha chadasha. That's a quote from the pasuk that we just read. Ein li'elo isha chadasha. That would, if you stuck to a literal translation, it would sound like when we say a new woman, it would mean a virgin girl. Almona gusha minayin. How about where do I know almona, a widow, or a divorcee? These are women that themselves had experienced marriage prior to this. How do we know that the man that is marrying them also, this kind of marriage also results in an exemption? Talmud Lomar, Isha, Mikol Mokom. The word Isha indicates any kind of woman. Imkein Ma Talmud Lomar, Isha Chadasha. If we're going beyond the literal meaning of the pasuk, so what role does the word chadasha have? Answer: Mi shechadasha lo. The Torah is telling us, as long as she is new to him, not that she has to be new to marriage. She's already been married, but she has to be new to him, to this guy. Well, who's not new to him? Yotza machzi gushoso she'ein chadasha lo. A man who, let us say, had divorced his wife and is now taking her back, he's remarrying her, that remarriage is not grounds for an exemption. Because she's not new to him. He's already been married to this woman. Tana Rabbanan, Lo Yetze Batzava. Also a quote from the Pasuk that we read. Yoho Batzava Hu Delo Yetze. Is it to be understood that he doesn't go into actual battle of Eliaspik Mayim Muslim Yasaki Nadrochim? But he does have to supply the soldiers with water, food, and tend to road repairs. Talmud Lomar Velo Yavur Olov Lecholdover. In the Pasuk that we read, you saw this expression that nothing is to be cast upon him. Yochol Sheni Marbe. Af ha'boyne bayis v'lo chanocho, not a karam v'lo chalalo, eras isha v'lo lekocha. Should I include in the in this exemption of the pasuk we just read, lo yetze batsova, that he doesn't go at all, a man who built a house but he has not yet lived in it, or he planted a vineyard but hasn't yet reached the fourth year, or he betrothed a woman but hasn't consummated his marriage? Talmud Lomar, Olov. Olov Iato Mavir, regarding the people we discussed, the people that married a woman and did consummate the marriage but hasn't been with her for a year yet. A person who had built a house and has Hanocho, and he has started living in it, and a person who built who planted the vineyard and reached the fourth year. Alovi atomavir, aval atomavir alachirim. The idea of supplying food and drink and road repairs does apply to others. In other words, only ones that have an exemption even from food supply and road repairs are the people that we mentioned already a few times, Eras Isha Ulekocha, and Bona Bayis V'Chanocho, and Not a Kerem V'Chilolo. Umeachash Dekosav Lo Yavor. Once the Pasuk says that he doesn't do anything, even the behind-the-lines actions, Lo Yetze Batsovo Lomali, why does it say that he doesn't go into battle? It's obvious. He's not even going to be supplying food. La'avor lov b'shnei lavin. If he goes into actual battle, then he will be in violation of two negative commands, namely lo yetze batzava and lo ya'avor lov l'chol dover. The Mishnah. V'yosvu ha'shoitrim l'daber la'om. The continuation of the pasuk you can see on the side, there's a star. V'yomru mi ho'ish ha'yorei v'racha levov yelech v'yoshev l'beisai. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Hayore Varacha Levov, Kimashmo. The terms of the Pasuk of Yore, fear struck, and Rachalevov, faint hearted, are taken literally. She'eno Yochol Lamud Bikishri Al Milchoma, Vadiros Cherev Shlufa. He cannot stand the, we'll call it the pressure of battle, and he cannot tolerate seeing a drawn sword. Rabbi Yossi Aglila Omer Hayorei V'racha Levov Zehu Amis Yorei Min HaVeir Shebiyodo. We made an allusion to this opinion earlier in our shiur today. This is a reference to someone who is fearful and faint-hearted because not of the battle, but because of sins that he has committed. I say not because of battle that. Don't accept that as a final statement, but simply in the context of this Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi Aglili is certainly going beyond that which Rabbi Akiva said. Lefikach tosa la'atora es kol elu sheyachzor biglolon. Rabbi Yossi Aglili is telling us that someone who is full of sins, who is fear-struck because of his sins, that he might, by going into battle, he's exposing himself to a dangerous situation, and someone who is sinful is more likely in a dangerous situation to suffer possibly mortally than in a non-dangerous situation. So because these people, we'll call them the sinners, have an exemption, on the other hand, if they were the only ones to be exempted, they would be very embarrassed. They'd be in a real bind. How can they, if they start walking away from the battle, people will then all will recognize, here's the sinner. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi Aglili tells us the Torah goes out of its way to afford exemptions to others. That's, as we mentioned, the Eras Isha, Bona Bayis, those cases, so that when people are seen withdrawing from the battle lines as a result of these announcements made by the Meshuch Mechoma and the Shoitrim, the public that sees people returning or withdrawing from the battle they'll say, oh, he must have built a house, or he must have just married a wife, and they won't say, oh, they're the sinners. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Almona l'koyin gadol, Grusha v'chalutza l'koyin hedyot, Mamzeres and Nosin Yisrael, Bas Yisrael and Mamzer l'nosin, four types of forbidden marriages, we already alluded to them earlier today. Hare Elu, Hayore v'racha levav. These are what the Torah has in mind when it says the fearful and faint-hearted. The Gemara will have to deal with what's the difference between what Rabbi Yossi is saying and Rabbi Yossi Haglili. After Rabbi Yossi Haglili said, Yore Racha Leva, for people that are involved with sin. These are four sinful type marriages. So are they not one and the same? We'll wait for the Gemara. V'hoya kechalis ha-shochim l'daber lo'om, ufoktu sore tzvois, b'rosh ha'om. The pasuk says that when the shochrim finished their announcement, military leaders had officers that were positioned at the front, Barosham, and Okev. Okev is the rear. The rear, in effect, is the other head of. There's the forward head of the troops, and then there's the back. It's also a type of head. So the word akevo literally has to do with the heel, but it's the rear of the troop assembly. So you would have ministers or officers appointed at the front and the back. Ma'amidim zekifim lifneim. The achirim me'achorehem ukshilim shabarzel bidehem. We take a look at the Rashi. Ma'amidim zekifim milifnehem b'roisha shel tzara melchama, on the front of the battle assembly, of the front line of troops. Ma'amidim b'nei adam giborim memunim l'kach. Warriors were appointed and placed there. Shimipol echad min alchomim, if one of the soldiers, one of the fighters falls, Yamidu, Viaz Kifuhu, Viagbiru, Es Anshe Hatsova Bidivram. They'll pick him up, they'll strengthen him, they'll encourage them, so that people while fighting discouraged. So they'll see. So that anyone who falls is immediately raised and repositioned and strengthened. Those are the zekifim, Foloshim, from the expression zokef kfufim. You know that maybe from the davening. Zokef, to straighten out someone who is otherwise bent or fallen. The Rashi goes on, it says, v'achirim, v'anoshim achirim me'achoreihem. And then there were others, appointed officials in the rear. Ukshilim shel barzel, Rashi says, Lishmor shelo yonusu ukshilim kein chitzim shikorin. It gives you a French word. To type, these people in the rear, they were officers that had particular arms, weapons called kshilim, and Rashi describes them as types of an arrow-like weapon. And what were these kshilim used for? So we continue in the mission. The bottom line: the cholam evakish lachzor, any soldier at this point when all the exemptees have withdrawn, so now everyone who's left is expected to fight, and anyone at this point that wants to back out, these officials that are at the rear of the troops have the right to cut down their legs. That's the kapecha shokov. They know they can physically afflict anyone that tries to run from battle. And why? We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Shetchilas nisa nefila. This expression is not clear. The Gemara later on will have to explain it. Rashi foreshadows the Gemara later. At the top line, Rashi says, Shetchilas nisa nefila. The truth is that the opposite should have been said, Sheha Nisa he tchilas hanefila. Nefila literally means falling. It means, we'll say, it means defeat. So that the text as it is, it says that the beginning of escape is defeat. When more accurately, it should say the beginning of defeat is through escape. When soldiers see that some of their comrades are running away, they lose heart, and then everyone fails, and they will then suffer defeat. So the beginning of nefila, of defeat, is nisa, is running. But that's not what it says in our text as it is, so we'll have to wait for that later to be dealt with in the Gemara. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Nos Yisrael lifnei plishtim, v'gam agefa g'dayla hoysa ba'om. Ulahalon hu omer, v'yanusu anshe Yisrael mitnei plishtim, v'yiplu chalolim v'gomer. What you see from these psukim is that the psukim are describing battles with the plishtim, and the pasuk describes the running of the Jews from the plishtim, and as a result of that, they suffered a magefa gedola, they suffered a great defeat. We continue in the Mishnah, Bamed Vomamurim. At this point, the Mishnah, we have a number one, because in a few lines, Rabbi Yehuda will appear, and we'll call him number two. Bamed Vomamurim, this is a qualification. When do these things apply? And Rashi, on the second line from the top, says, Bamed Vomamurim, the Chuzrin min HaMarocha. Under what circumstances do we entitle withdraw from the battle lines? We mention a man who just got married, a man who built a house and started living in it. When do these things apply? V'yesh she'enon zozen mimakomen. We had others that don't even leave their houses. We had two categories: those that go to the battle area, the battle lines, and the Mashuch Mechoma and the Shoitra make their announcements, and as a result there is exemption from continuing into battle, and we had others that didn't go to the battle lines at all. All of this is qualified to and limited to Bilmilchemes HaRashus. So we continue in the Mishnah. Bamevrim Bilmilchemes HaRashus, we'll call it this topic of exemptions applies to elective wars. Avol b'milchamos mitzvah hakol yoitzin. When it comes to milchamos that are classified not as optional wars, but mitzvah wars, everyone goes. Afilu chosen mechadro v'chalo mi'chupasa. Even a bridegroom who just got married and the kala from her marriage canopy means they're freshly married. No exemption. Why? Because you're dealing with a milchemes mitzvah. What is meant by a milchemes mitzvah? So Rashi on the third line from the top says, "Avol b'milchamos mitzvah kegoin kibush eretz Yisrael bimei Yoshua hakol yoitzin." The wars that were led by Yoshua in the conquest of the land, wars like that, where the Almighty commanded the Jewish people to battle their way into conquering the land. That's a milchemes mitzvah. That is, for that, there's no exemption. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Bamed Vomamurim, the same opening as the Tanakhama. Under what circumstances do we have these aforementioned exemptions? B'milchemes mitzvah. Avo b'milchemes choiva, Hakol yoitzin, afilu choson mechadro v'kala mechupasa. These are expressions that the Gemara will deal with. They have to be explained. Is there a direct contradiction between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda seems to be lenient in the sense that a milchemes mitzvah is grounds for exemption, and the Tanakhama said no? That will be the subject of the Gemara later on. But one thing is clear, that Rabbi Yehuda has a higher level of obligation in when it comes to a milchemes chova. So whatever the Tanakhama said about a milchemes mitzvah, that hakol yoitzim even choson mechadro, those very same words Rabbi Yehuda says when applied to a milchemes chova. Chova, chiyuv, something that translated would come out obligatory. The Gemara, my Iko Bain Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Yossi Glili. When we learned the Mishnah, we already alluded to this question, to this problem. Rabbi Yossi spoke about the Kohen and the forbidden marriage, so he doesn't have an exemption, an almona to a Kohen Gadol or a divorcee to a Kohen Hedyo. Rabbi Yossi says there's no exemption, no military exemption. And according to Rabbi Yossi Glili, people who are fearful of sins that they've committed have no, they have an exemption. Let's just go over the last points again. I think I was a little inaccurate with whether it's Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yossi Glili. Both opinions in the Mishnah are referring to the pasuk that Yorei Varacha Levov are exempted. According to Rabbi Yossi, Yorei Varacha Levov describes an almona l'kohen gadol. It describes a sinful marriage. Rabbi Yossi Glili says people who have sins are Yorei Varacha Levov. They are also exempted. Well, what's the difference then between them? Iko binayu avera derabona. The difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi Glili would be someone whose sin is a rabbinic. It's a sin of a rabbinic nature. In other words, a rabbinic command is stated, and this guy, this offender, has violated something of a rabbinic nature. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili alone, he would have a right to withdraw. Rabbi Yossi, not to be confused with Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi specified Torah-level offenses. He specified almona to a kohen gadol. That's a Torah-level offense. A grusha is a Torah-level offense when it comes to marrying a kohen. But if his sins are concerning rabbinic commands, rabbinic matters, so according to Rabbi Yossi, he would not have an exemption. Keman az laha desani. We have an unnamed Tanaic source, and we're asking who would author this. The source deals with tefillin. Tefillin are practiced by male Jews every morning. Some people actually wear them all day. There's a tefillin shel rosh and a tefillin shel yad. We put on the tefillin shel yad, the arm tefillin first, and in the singular, the word tefillin, when you want to refer to a singular, we'll say box, we call them a tefillah, not to be confused with the word, the same spelling referring to prayer, or I should say the same sound. Whether or not it's the same spelling, that's already, we have to leave that aside. Maybe one is spelled with a yud and the other without, but for our purposes, the same sounding word, tefillah, it could be prayer, it could be a singular of tefillin. When putting on tefillin, the halacha demands silence, i.e. no mundane talk between putting on the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel rosh. Mundane, common talk, any talk for that matter, other than the, if it's a question of reciting a benediction, that obviously is okay. That itself is a machlokes rishonim, but idle talk certainly is strictly forbidden between putting on the tefillin shel yad, which you put on first, and then the tefillin shel rosh. And what does it say in this source? It says soch, that's idle talk or common talk, bein tefillah, the tefillah between the arm tefillin, which you put on first, and then the head tefillin, the tefillin shel rosh, avera hi biyada, that's considered a sin. Rashi adds it's a sin if he doesn't make a new bracha on the tefillin shel rosh as a result of having spoken. So the conversation between tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh is a sin. The chozer olah meorche hamilchama, and as a result of this kind of sin, and I would imagine most of you would conclude and rightfully so, this is a rabbinic offense. This is grounds for withdrawing from battle. On the grounds that we've described as Yorei and Rachalevov. Keman, who would author this? Rabbi Yossi Haglili. This would conform to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who we just pointed out before this source, is of the opinion that all sins, even rabbinic offenses, is enough for a person to rely on as a reason for exemption, for being considered yorei v'racha levav. Man tano loha detanu rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source, and we want to know who would the author of this unnamed source be. Shoma kul kronos v'yirtiav. Fellow hears the sounds of the trumpets that are used in battle, and he becomes shaken up. Hagofas treisin v'yirtiav. Hears the clanging of the shields that soldiers use, and he is fear-struck. Tzichtzua charovos, and he hears the sharpening or the banging of swords one on the other. Umayim sheisin al-birkov, and as a result, as he's losing control of his system, and he ends up literally urinating out of fear. Choser, he goes back. He is allowed to withdraw. Very simply, we've just described someone who is literally faint-hearted and fear-struck because of the battle environment. He's allowed to go back, withdraw from the battle. Come on, based on whom is this? Lema Rabbi Akiva hi velo Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Should we say this conforms to Rabbi Akiva alone and not according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Because when we read the Mishnah, we suggested maybe this is the case, that Rabbi Akiva says Yorei v'racha levav kimashmo, as it is. Simple translation of those words is one who's fear-struck and faint-hearted. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, he interpreted those words as referring to sinfulness. So this Tanaic source, which doesn't deal with sinfulness, it deals simply with a person who's fear-struck, has a right to withdraw. Maybe that's only Rabbi Akiva, not Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The Gemara answers, Baha afilu Rabbi Yossi Aglili moide. Rabbi Yossi Aglili concedes this too is grounds for return. Ah, but he said that Yorei and Racha Levov mean sins. So the Gemara tells it doesn't mean only sins, because the Pasuk also says, Mishum dichtiva lo yimas es levav echov kilavovo. The Torah doesn't want someone who is going to cause others to lose it, to literally for their hearts to be melted. Well, who would cause that? Someone who is there in battle with his knees shaking out of fear and who can't even withhold his own waist because he's so frightened. Someone, if you leave someone like that in battle, it'll cause others to become discouraged. And as a result, even Rabbi Yossi Aglili acknowledges that when we speak of Yorei and Racha Levov, we're not coming to the exclusion of someone who is simply fear-struck because of the battle conditions, but the battle, the circumstances of war. We continue in the Gemara. V'hoyo k'chalois ha-shoitrim. This is a quote from the Torah, Devarim, Perek, Chof, Pasuk, Tes. The Torah says, V'hoyo k'chalois ha-shoitrim l'daber el ha'om u'fokdu sorei tzevois b'roish ha'om. The Mishnah spoke about the appointing of officials that would be at the front of the troops, at the, behind the troops, and the necessity of having them was so as to prevent defectors from leaving the battle and bringing down the morale of the others. Here, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah, raises the problem we raised when we were studying the Mishnah. You have a little arrow to the right-hand side of the text. You can see where this is a quote from. Hi, mipnei shetchilas nisa nefila. We explained that the officers with the arms behind the troops was to deter anyone from running away, because defection and escape is the beginning of running is defeat. That doesn't make any sense. Rather, mipnei shetchilas nefila, the beginning of defeat, nisa mi boyale. It should have said, the Mishnah should have stated it thusly, that the beginning of the first signs of defeat is escape and defection. So the Gemara says, you know, that's a good point. Amar. So really, the Mishnah should say that neishet chilas nefila, the beginning of defeat, nisa is through defection. Bamed vamur mechames horashus v'chulei. Rabbi Yochanan, he comes to, we'll say, moderate or qualify the machlokes that we saw in the Mishnah. I say machlokes simply because there's a Tanakamo and Rabbi Yudah wasn't coming to argue, he wouldn't have appeared in the Mishnah. So, but we haven't really focused on what is their point of machlokes. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rishus de Rabbonon zuhi mitzvah de Rabbi Yudah. What the Rabbonon call Rishus, Rabbi Yudah refers to by the term mitzvah. In other words, they're one and the same. Those words are into what the as we say what the Rabbonon referred to as Rishus, Rabbi Yudah refers to as mitzvah. Mitzvah the Rabbonon, what the Rabbonon referred to by the term mitzvah, zuhi choiva de Rabbi Yudah. That's what Rabbi Yudah refers to when he says milchemes choiva. Well, if that's all, then there wouldn't be any machlokis in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan obviously understands that there is a machlokis. So Omar Rava explains Rabbi Yochanan. There are three categories that we'll see. Concerning two of the categories, there is no disagreement. It's only one of these three categories that will be the basis of disagreement. Omar Rava, Milchomois Yoshua Lichboish. The wars of Yoshua. Yoshua led the Jewish people into the land of Israel and was ordered by the Almighty to battle and eradicate the local population. That, everyone agrees, Divrei HaKol, Choiva. The Rabbonon, Rabbi Yudah, agree that it's called, it's obligatory, and the practical application of that is that the Choson Mechadro and the Kala Mechuposo, they are to go into the battle and do what they have to do in war, in the war effort. So there's no disagreement about that type of battle. Milchomois Beis Dovid L'Ravocha. Ravocha means literally increase or profit. If you study the Gemara in Brochus, pretty much in the beginning of the first parak, and there's also a parallel Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, I believe. This has to do with elective wars. Situations where, as nations of the world do, they increase their, if they have the power to, they will increase their landholding, their boundaries. They can actually capture neighboring populations and extract taxation, impose taxation upon them. So that type of battle where which David HaMelech engaged in, he conquered areas north of Eretz Yisrael, it's called Aram Tzova. That's Milchemes Beis David. Wars like those conducted by David for, as we say, elective purposes, L'Ravocha for profit, Divrei HaKol Rishus. Everyone will agree, that's called optional, and all the exemptions that we've mentioned till now will apply, and certainly the Choson and the Mechadro and Kala Mechuposo will not take place then. Ki Pligi, under what circumstances is there a machlokes? Limute oivde kechavim delolesi alayhu. Here we're going to translate the Gemara, and I just must mention by way of we'll say disclaimer or editorial prefatory note that this Gemara is actually lies at the heart of a great deal of we'll say halachic ferment, to be politically correct, that takes place nowadays, I say nowadays, that means as this recording is being made. If you are listening to this recording many years afterwards and things have changed, so be it. But as of the date of this recording, in the year Tovshin Ayin Hei, there is a great amount of discussion in halachic circles concerning this topic. And the literal translation would have to do with reducing or eliminating enemies of Israel, idol worshippers, Gentiles, eliminating them so that they do not come upon us. In other words, they have warlike tendencies, the intention of fighting us. So we'll call this defensive battles. Defensive battles might entail preemptive strikes, but that's, as the Gemara says, that's to eliminate them so that they do not come upon you. So it has to do with, we'll say, national defense. How are we to categorize this? More kori lo mitzvah. Rabbi Yehuda refers to this by the term mitzvah. Umor kori rishus. And the Rabbonan refer to this type of war, this type of battle, this type of war effort, as rishus. Nafka mina, the practical difference between them is how do we apply the concept or the rule of oisek b'mitzvah poter min ha-mitzvah? The halacha says that when you're in the middle of performing a mitzvah, you are thereby exempt from doing other mitzvahs. While being engaged in the performance of a particular mitzvah, so that takes precedence over other mitzvahs that come your way later, and we'll say, and would then compete with the mitzvah that you're currently involved in. So that if you classify this as a milchemes mitzvah, so you're oisek b'mitzvah, and therefore you'll be exempt from other mitzvahs that would interfere with your fulfillment of this mitzvah, this battle, the limute evdikicham dolei selayu. According to the Rabbanan, it's not classified as a mitzvah. So it doesn't represent grounds for exemption from doing other mitzvahs that arise at this time that you're involved with the battle efforts. So here the Gemara says that this kind of battle, so defensive wars, are the point of controversy, and the manifestation of this controversy is regarding the point of oisik b'mitzvah poter min ha-mitzvah. What about choson mechadro v'kalo mechuposa in this kind of effort? So let's take a look at Rashi. There's a Rashi a bit earlier, Rishus de Rabbanon. Now the Rashi we're looking at is halfway down the Rashi. Again, Rashi occupies both sides of the Gemara page, so we're looking at what would be the Tosfos column. Rashi, Rishus de Rabbanon, Zuhi Mitzvah de Rabbi Yehuda. Let's read the Rashi there. Uba'oisim el chomo sha'omru chachomim shehi rishus. That kind of war that the chachomim say is rishus. V'ein choson yoytse la, and the newlywed man is not going to depart from his marriage, his need to be with his wife for the sake of the battle. So on that kind of battle that the Rabbonan call Rishus, Omar Nami Reb Yehuda, the Ein Choson Yoytse La, Elo She Reb Yehuda Kore La, Kore Osa Mitzvah. So as Rava points out, what is it, what kind of battle is it, or which battle is it that the Rabbonan say is called Rishus, and Reb Yehuda say that would be called Mitzvah? Rava says that is the limute of the kavdalei selayu, so that there is agreement between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon regarding the Chosan and Kala total exemption. What is the point of difference between them? The nafkamino lefotro mishar mitzvus ba'oda osuk bo kin meforesh rav of Oziel. The point of difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is exempting a person from other mitzvahs while he's engaged in this kind of war effort, of we'll call it defensive war effort. What we've done is simply presented the Gemara. Gemara markings never attempts to reach applied halachic conclusions, and all the more so in areas that are, we'll say, the subject of great, we'll say, controversy and debate. For that, one has to go much further and learn the appropriate meforshim, rishonim, achronim, and gedoyli Yisrael, etc., in order to come to a final conclusion. With the assistance of the one above, you can see we've reached the end of the 8th perek of Sota. Now we continue with the 9th perek and final perek of our Masechta. The perek begins with one of the topics that we had seen at the beginning of the 7th perek, listed in the Mishnah, of things that need, when recitation takes place, must be done in Hebrew. The topic, Eglo Arufa, concerns the unfortunate circumstances of discovering a murder victim between two cities. Measuring must be done in order to determine unto which city this murder victim is closer. And when that's determined, a ceremony takes place. In the meantime, let's make it clear we do not know who the murderer is. And we associate the problem or the need for atonement on the city that's closest to the victim. And part of that ritual the ritual is the bringing of a calf, and the calf is brought to a specific described location. A heavy knife or an axe is used to chop its head from behind. We're not dealing with slaughter, ritual slaughter we call shechita. It's a different process, but it's the decapitation. And there are psukim that are recited. You'll see there are different participants in the ceremony. There are members of based in Agodo, members of Sanhedrin. There are the elders of the city which is closest to the victim, and there are Kohanim that all participate in this. The Mishnah opens and says, "Eglo Arufa Beloshon Hakodesh." The recitations that characterize Eglo Arufa must be said in Hebrew. We take a look at Rashi. Egla rufa baloshan akedish nemeres masha zikenim oimrim yodenu lo shavchu. That's in Perek Chof Aleph of Devarim Pasuk Zayin. Valkenim oimrim kapir lamchu Yisrael. It's in Pasuk Ches baloshan akedish uzkuku min haTorah lomra. They are required from the Torah to say these in Hebrew. How do you know that it has to be said in Hebrew? So the Mishnah quotes a pasuk, but when we look at the pasuk, we're going to ask ourselves, as the Gemara itself does, how do you see Hebrew in this pasuk? So it says, "Ki motzei shenemar, ki motzei cholo ba'adoma, v'yotzev zekeinecha v'shoftecha." The pasuk we've written on the side, pasuk aleph, says, "Ki motzei cholo ba'adoma, asher Hashem elokecha noiseinoch lerishta, nofeil basode lo noda mi hiko." And Pasuk Beis went on to say, "V'yotze zekeinecha v'shoftecha." On this, "V'yotze zekeinecha v'shoftecha," that means there shall come forth or go forth the elders and the judges. Shloisha mi Beis Din Agadol Yerushalayim ho'yotzim. Three members of the high court of the Sanhedrin that sat in Yerushalayim, they would have to appear here. Three. And they came for the purpose of measuring to which city is the body that's found closer. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chamisha. Five judges from the high court would do this. Shenemar, Zekeinecha, Shnayim. Veshoftecha, Shnayim. These words appear in the plural, and the minimum plural form is two. So, Zekeinecha, two elders, two judges. These are literal translations, but for our purposes, we're dealing with members of the high court. The Ein Beis Din Shokel, you cannot have an even number of judges. You can't have an even number of people that represent a judge, an act of judgment, a court. The Torah itself says that when coming to a legal decision, acharei rabin lahatos, you must follow the majority. When you speak about following the majority, that means that the number of people there has to be an odd number, because otherwise you could have a situation, well, split decision, where you don't have a majority. And the Torah seems to be telling us that the number of judges must be such that, and under all circumstances, you will have the possibility of a majority. So, if you just say two and two, that's four. Ein bez and shokel. A shokel means an even number. You can't have literally means a balanced number. Therefore, moisifen aleim odechad, we add one more. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there are five members of the Sanhedrin. The Tanakhama says three. Nimsa tomon bagal otoli bilan, if the body is found buried under a heap of stones, or suspended in a tree, otsof al panei hamayim, or floating on water. Lo hoyu orphan. Orphan is a reference to the arufa, the ceremony of the egla arufa. For our purposes, under those circumstances, there's not going to be any egla arufa ceremony. Shinemar, the pasuk said, and we read this pasuk aleph in Perek Chof says, bo adama. You found the cholol ba adama, velo tomon bagabo. That means on the ground, not under a heap of stones. No fail. The pasuk made reference to the body had fallen, velo tolu bila, not suspended in a tree. Basadeh, in the field, velo tsof al panei hamayim, not floating on water. Nimtza somuch lisfaro liir sheruba oivde kechavim, if the victim was found, sfar means the border. The national border. Oh, or that's found liir, it's somuch to a city. That's ruba of the kum, that the majority of that city are idol worshippers. Oliir she'ein bo beisdin, or a city that doesn't have a court in it. Lo hoyu modedim, there would not be any measuring that takes place. Ein modedim el oliir she'eish bo beisdin. This seems to be redundant. The Gemara will deal with it. It says here that no measuring is done unless there is a unless it's to a city that has in it a court. What we've done, if we've translated the Mishnah, what the basis of these points are, we'll leave for the Gemara later on. The Gemara asks, after being told that Egla Rufa is done in Hebrew, a pasuk was cited, and it didn't seem from the pasuk that there was any reference to a restriction to Hebrew. Therefore, the Gemara asks, "My Ka'omar, how do you see Lashon HaKodesh from the pasuk that was quoted in the Mishnah?" Omar Rabbi Avo, Hochi Ka'omar. Rabbi Avo says the Mishnah is to be understood thusly. So now we have to elaborate. The Gemara elaborates, and then you'll see how everything fits together. The Mishnah opened up by saying that Egla Rufa is Lashon HaKodesh. Shenemar, the pasuk says in Devarim Perek. The Perek Chof Aleph, Posuk Zayin. Now, Posuk Zayin is, let's say, further into the story. We cited before Posuk Aleph, where the Torah mentioned a body was found, and they have to then proceed with an entire ceremony. And by Pasuk Zion, it says, Shenema Vionu Viomru. There, the Pasuk is making reference to the announcements, the recitations that take place. The Pasuk speaks about the elders of that closer city. Onu v'yomru, they speak up and they say, Yodeinu lo shafhu es hadam hazeh v'enu lo ro. Well, as far as what the Pasuk means itself, we'll have to wait for the Gemara to describe that later. But the elders of the city make an announcement to claiming innocence from having been, let's say, responsible for the murder. So that term, Onu v'yomru, that's the key for us. Lahalanu omer, elsewhere in the Torah, by the instructions concerning Har Grizim and Har Eval. This is a subject, topic that we discussed quite extensively in the 7th Perek, where there was a national blessing and cursing that took place. It says there, regarding Har Grizim and Har Eval, it says, V'onu halavim v'omru v'chulei. Ma ani amura lahalon v'loshon ha-kodesh, just like by Har Grizim and Har Eval, it was proven that it was done in Hebrew. That's not our focus right now. That's a gift for us. That's a given that we've already discussed how you know that over there. But for our purposes, Har Grizim and Har Eval was done in Loshon HaKodesh in Hebrew, Avkan, so to Egla Rufa, but Loshon HaKodesh, because you see the same expression of the Onu, the Omru. The Seder, Egla Rufa Ketzad. Now, the... How does the ceremony take place in order of events? So there now, that is where this is where there is a relevance to the pasuk quoted in our Mishnah. Okay, and how is the Seder Egla Rufa? Ki motzei cholo ba'adoma. If you find a murder victim, v'yotzei zekenech v'shoftecha. And as the Mishnah went on to say, then the elders come together. According to Tanna Kamma, 3 members of the high court came for the measuring. So when you look at things now, the Mishnah opened up with a halacha, Egla Rufa B'loshon HaKodesh. And now the source for that opening halacha, you didn't see in the original Mishnah text. And that's what Rabbi Avoh is filling in over here. Then that is V'onu Halavim V'omru. That Gezerah Shava of V'onu V'omru. The Mishnah mentioned a Pasuk Ki Motzei. Well, what precedes that is Ketzad, the Seder Eglo Arufa Ketzad, which also Rabbi Avoh inserted here. So we, just to review the structure of things, the opening law of the Mishnah is explained by, let's say, verses that we are not in the Mishnah. And the verse quoted in the Mishnah is a reference to a law that's not, or a phenomenon that's not stated in the Mishnah. Rabbi Avoh, of course, filled in all the blanks. We continue in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Chamisha. Here, the topic at hand is introduced by the, you know, say, the topic heading that we have on the side, Mekoros Lemispar Adayonim Legla Rufa, sources regarding the number of judges required for the Egla Rufa ceremony, which includes at the early stage of the ceremony the measuring from the corpse to the nearest town, and the Mishnah presented to us a machlokes between the Tanna Kamma, said 3 members of the great Sanhedrin, and Rabbi Yehuda said 5. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Chamisha v'chulei Tanu Rabbanan. Here we have a Tanaic source, and it presents the 2 opinions. But the first opinion in this Tanaic source, in this Brisa, is actually Rabbi Yehuda, the 5 opinion, and he's followed by Rabbi Shimon, who represents the 3 judges' opinion. The, we'll say, opposite order from the way the opinions were presented in our Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, v'yotzu zekeinecha v'shoftecha. Zekenecha equals Shnayim. V'shoftecha equals Shnayim. V'hein bezin shokol. Mosivim lem od echad. Since you can't have an even number of members of the court there, we add 1 more. Harei kan chamisha divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That gives us a total of 5. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Zekenecha equals Shnayim. The ain base in shokel, two is also an even number. You can't have an even number. Therefore, mosim lam eidechad, we add one more. Hare kan shlosha, giving you a total of three. Well, when we read Rabbi Shimon, we see he darshens the word zekenecha. He made no reference to the shoftecha word, which Rabbi Yehuda did account for. For Rabbi Shimon, nami hok si v'shoftecha. Rabbi Shimon, we ask, does it not say v'shoftecha, which would seemingly include another two, and you would have five, not three, like you said. So Rabbi Shimon will answer, ha'humi boyalei. He needs v'shoftecha l'miyuchodim she'v'shoftecha. When we speak about the need for members of the court, which court? So Rabbi Shimon says, from the word v'shoftecha, I learn that it means the highest judges, the elders that are the judges of all of Israel. That means members of the court of 71 that sat in judgment in the Beis Hamikdash, in the Lishkas HaGozes. So that's what Rabbi Shimon tells us, that the word v'shoftecha is not here for number purposes. For Rabbi Yehuda, mizikney zikeinecha nafka. Rabbi Yehuda says shoftecha is here for number purposes. How does Rabbi Yehuda know that the judges that are present for the measuring ceremony or the measuring procedure, they are from the high court? Well, since the Torah didn't just say ziknei, but it says zikeinecha, that change in grammar leads Rabbi Yehuda to say the special ones. The pasuk could have said ziknei, but it says zikeinecha means the special ones amongst the zikeinim. For Rabbi Shimon, his response to that is, "I kosav rachmona ziknei." Had the Torah used the word ziknei alone? You see, before we go on, just to repeat what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda said that there, because of the word zikeinecha, I understand top judges, which I wouldn't have understood from the word ziknei. But by writing zikeinecha, now I understand top judges. Rabbi Shimon says, I would not have come to that conclusion. Why not? E kosav rachmona ziknei, had the Torah written that the word as such, hava amino, I would have thought afilu ziknei hashuk. I would have thought it means old men that are found in the market, old men from the public, without any allusion to scholarship. Kosav rachmona zikeinecha. The word zikeinecha indicates men, elders, in terms of scholarship. So that, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, zikeinecha wouldn't have been sufficient for telling me top judges. It just would have been to the exclusion of elderly commoners. V'yi kosav rachmona zikeinecha, hava mina filu sanhedrin katana. Had we been left with the word zikeinecha and not the word shoftecha, I would have thought members of a sanhedrin katana. Sanhedrin katana is a reference to courts of 23 that were entitled to judge capital cases, but they were not the top court. Therefore, kosav rachmona v'shoftecha lemiuchodim shebishoftecha. The word shoftecha had to be used to exclude members of a Sanhedrin Ketana, and hence those top judges that sat in judgment in the Lishkas HaGozes, the special chamber that was part of the Beis HaMikdash. So as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, shoftecha is certainly not for number purposes. For Rabbi Yehuda, gomar ziknei ziknei mi ziknei ha'eda. At this point, it would appear that Rabbi Yehuda has to, let's say, defend himself against Rabbi Shimon's seemingly convincing argument. So that the question is, after having heard Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda will come to the realization that the zikeinecha would not be sufficient for getting me to the conclusion of top judges. So how do I reach that conclusion? So Rabbi Yehuda says, we'll say this is a new approach. Rabbi Yehuda Gomar Ziknei Ziknei, a word comparison. Mizikne ho'eda. This is a pasuk found in the context of a par helam dover shel tzibor. It's a special korban brought on the occasion that the high court makes an error in judgment. And that topic of zikne ho'eda, that topic of par helam dover shel tzibor, is in fact restricted to the case of the highest court. Ma lahalon miuchodim shebeido, just like there, the word zikne appears. It refers to the special, the choicest of the judges, the top judges. Af kan, so too in egla rufa, where the word zikne appears as well, miuchodim shebeido. The Gemara asks, oh, if this is Rabbi Yehuda's approach, then e gomar, if he has a gezera shava from par helam dover shel tzibor to the topic of egla rufa, ligmira lekula milsame hasam, then he should go all the way with that word comparison, including the issue of numbers, because in the topic of par helam dover shel tzibor, there's a requirement of the placing of hands upon the head of that sacrifice that we call par helam dover shel tzibor. How many zakenim are to do that? That's what's called. It's called smicha. Smicha is the placing of the hands on the animal's head. How many are to do that? Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in par helam dover shel tzibor, five judges do that. So if Reb Yehuda is going to learn a gzera shava from par helam dover shel tzibor to the topic of egla rufa with regard to the need for Sanhedrin Hagadol members, why not continue and conclude the matter of numbers as well from par helam dover shel tzibor? Namely, just like by par helam dover shel tzibor, Reb Yehuda says five are required, so too by egla rufa, five should be required. And if so, zekeinecho v'shoftecho lomali, what do I need the zekeinecho v'shoftecho words for? Which, up till now, we thought those words were the basis of the five. Ella, v'shoftecho kerebi Shimon. We're going back to the drawing board as far as we are concerned, as far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned. The word v'shoftecho, the word shoftecha, I should also add here, Rashi points out there is no, Rabbi Yehuda does not learn the gezeira shava. We thought that he learned a gezeira shava. No, he doesn't learn the word comparison from par helam to egla rufa. So we drop that approach, the word comparison, and the word shoftecha, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is like Rabbi Shimon. And vav leminyona, the letter vav, we had, what did Rabbi Shimon do with the word shoftecha? He needed the word v'shoftecha for the Sanhedrin HaGodol reference. What about the word zekeinecha? So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon agree that zekeinecha teaches me two. With regard to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a vav. The letter vav of vishoftecha, that letter vav leminyana. For Rabbi Yehuda, that's for counting purposes, meaning another two. So you have zekeinecha gives you two. Vav of v'shoftecha, the vav letter, gives you another two, and you can't have an even court. Hence, five. The word shoftecha is not for number purposes. It's to tell me members of high court. The Rebbe Shimon, we continue at the top of Daf Memhei. Vav lo mashmalei. He doesn't see any significance in the vav. So as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, the vav isn't going to increase the number from the basic three that Rabbi Shimon had arrived at by the words zekeinecha and ein bez din shokel. The Gemara asks a question. If we're learning from the fact that the Torah states things in the plural form. Ela me'ata v'yotzu shnayim. It says, we saw in the Pasuk, the Pasuk, I should say, made reference to,